Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Everybody, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us once again tonight on At Home with Victoria. I am Victoria Gaither, the television journalist and host of the show, and entertainment co-host Michael Kay is joining us tonight. You know, tonight's show is very special. Of course, if you know me, all of our shows are very special, but this one is a little different for us, for Michael and I, because it hits very close to home, and we are talking about hospice care, specifically. The folks that are going to be joining us tonight, we're going to be talking about the folks in Delaware. So, Michael Kay, we're excited because we get to give a lot of good information.
We do. Just for a little bit of background information, Steve was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis about 8 years ago, and then about 4 years ago he moved into secondary progressive and has since debilitated, getting to the point that now he is bedridden. And a good friend of mine, Judy McGrane, turned me on to Delaware Hospice. I knew what hospice was, but I really didn't know what it was. And when she actually described to me the type of services they offer, and I got in touch with the Delaware division, Victoria, you can't know what a peace of mind this organization lends. And I thought it was very, very timely. So, yes, we're having Steve's care team on. We're having Michelle, the nurse, Barb, the social worker, David, the chaplain, and Lou, the volunteer. But Alan Henderson is one of the heads of Delaware Hospice, and we're going to interview him first. But, Vic, I hear something interesting is going down in Florida. I hear you're getting all newsy.
Yes, yes. Marilyn Bennett, who is our became our official chat room producer and one of the producers for the show, is actually posting inside the chat room as myself. So I've got all of my TV monitors on, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, because you guys probably know that the Florida primary returns are coming in. So we know many of you are concerned about that and you're watching that. So we want to let you know if anything breaks regarding that, that we'll certainly mention that during the show. But I can certainly tell you right now that Romney is leading early returns in Florida. Mm. But again, we are going to continue to watch that for you. So, Michael, I'm excited about today's show. And for those of you who don't know, before we actually get to Alan Henderson, Steve and Mike got married, what was it, a couple of weeks ago?
Which
was very exciting. And we all kind of got to the opportunity to see that video. So one of the people that I'm really excited to talk to is the chaplain, because I literally was in awe as I watched the chaplain perform the ceremony. So I'm really, really excited about that. But with that said, first, Alan Henderson, tell us a little bit about Alan, Michael, before we bring him into the conversation.
Well, Alan, I've just talked to him briefly on the phone, but he's a business development manager and has been with hospice for quite some time. And, I mean, the entire care team is fantastic. But, Alan, tell me exactly, how long have you been with Delaware Hospice?
I have been with Delaware Hospice, Michael, for 5 years.
5 years. What stirred you on to get involved with an organization like this?
Well, before I became involved with Delaware Hospice, I had been on the periphery of healthcare, working for an occupational health testing company. But my affinity for hospice was born of a personal experience with our 7-year-old daughter, who contracted leukemia. And
right.
Towards the end of the aggressive treatment, when the physicians pretty much told us that curative care was not in the cards, that was the first time anyone had approached us to discuss hospice. That was in 2001.
Right. That's it's a devastating it was to me anyways, to actually know once the staff from Delaware Hospice came out, I didn't really know what it meant to qualify for it, but it is as devastating as it is brilliant when you actually hear those words that you'll be accepted into hospice. How long was he or she involved with hospice?
Our daughter Katie, she was involved for the better part of a month, which actually is what we would refer to as a late referral, because hospice, if I may explain, rather than what hospice is, I prefer to approach what hospice isn't. And what hospice isn't, it isn't about death. It isn't about losing hope. It isn't about clinical environment. It is about elevating the quality of life for the time that's left.
Right. Now, Vic, you've had some knowledge of hospice as well, haven't you?
Yeah, Alan, you know, it's interesting because in my television career as a journalist, I've had the opportunity to actually, when I worked on Maryland's Eastern Shore in Salisbury, to do a number of stories on hospice care. And I used to be one of the health reporters, so we kind of teamed up with one of the hospice folks and sort of, you know, did that. And what was interesting about it was what you just said. The first thing that we talked about was what hospice is not, and that sort of perception that people may think or have of hospice. So, I mean, it was a wonderful opportunity for me to actually go inside of homes of people that were all ages, you know, all ages, all backgrounds. Some of them, I think the youngest person that I saw was about 25 or 26, and the oldest was a woman who was in her 80s. But I remember having a revelation, thinking that in my mind, I always thought that when you dealt with hospice, that it was really focusing on the elderly people. And I was so kind of, you know, shocked to see that, no, you know, Victoria, it's just not elderly people. It's people who are ending the final stage of their life. So, you know, hospice is pretty much for anyone. And the second thing that really struck me was that I always thought that it takes very, very special people to do that work, because the hospice people, you know, they're there every single day, and everybody, when I interview them, kept saying the same thing to me. You know what, Victoria, this person just feels like family now. So those were the two things, Alan, that really struck me. Maybe you have a comment about those.
Well, quite frankly, I am not a clinical person. I operate on the business side of things. And even though we are a nonprofit hospice, you know, we still have to manage the business, and that's the piece that I'm involved with directly. However, I am very, very proud and happy to say that I work shoulder to shoulder with some of the most caring, talented experts in the field of end-of-life care that I've ever met. I mean, these are a fabulous group of people.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Alan. Walk us through the interview phase of hospice. For those who don't know, you get a first initial interview, and then a nurse comes out and stuff. Explain that whole process as to what hospice does to determine level of care.
Sure. Basically, there's two things that need to happen to have someone become hospice appropriate. The first is a terminal diagnosis. So, a physician has got to certify that the illness is terminal. And secondly, the prognosis should be 6 months or less. Those two things taken together, also the patient would need to, or the power of attorney or the patient or the caregiver would need to sign an informed consent that curative treatment is pretty much not going to be in the plan of care. So, those items taken together would make you hospice appropriate. And once the call is made, once the referral call is made, then the agency will send out a nurse, usually to assess the patient and just to see that everything is in line in terms of hospice appropriateness. Once that is taken care of, then the team itself, hospice patients and families. Actually, one thing I failed to mention is that the unit of care in a hospice program is not the patient, but the patient and the patient's family or caregiver support system. Mm. So equally as important as the patient themselves are all those folks who are in that patient's immediate universe. So.
Absolutely, and I may just make a quick mention, too, just not to cut you off, David, there, but once all the assessment and the nurse comes in and stuff like that, I was floored at the turnaround. Within 24 hours, there was meds on my doorstep, there was appointments being booked up. I mean, you guys are really, really on the ball. Now, you said you're a nonprofit, so all of your funding comes from the private sector. Is that correct?
That is correct. Certainly, we bill whatever we can for Medicare and Medicaid in the areas where it's appropriate. Otherwise, our revenue or our support comes from the generosity of the community, both individuals and corporate donors.
Right. And just wanted to go ahead and make mention to everybody, if you wanted to go ahead and donate time or money, contact the Delaware Hospice at www.delawarehospice.org. But, Vic, it's just a fine group of people. I'm so happy to introduce them to you, Vic.
I know. And, you know, this is something that of course, that you have been dealing with and that we've been talking about getting this show together. And I know with Alan's job, especially with health care costs and all the debate that's sort of out there in the world today of politics. And I just want to mention that speaking of politics, I just want to let everybody know, because I know a lot of you are also have your eye on the Florida primary tonight, and CNN has just said that Romney actually did win with 47% of the vote. So I just wanted to mention that, and our chat room producer, Mar, is putting that information inside the chat room. But Alan, one thing that I wanted to ask you, and this is a question that I got via email when people found out that we were going to do this show about the whole Medicare-Medicaid thing. There was a woman who said that she was afraid to literally contact hospice because she thought that that she would not be able to afford it and that the system just wouldn't work for her. What would you say to somebody like that? I mean, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm no specialist in this. I know nothing about it. But, you know, it certainly doesn't hurt to contact somebody to try and just see if you can go through the process because you never know, right?
That's an excellent point, Victoria. I would suggest that there is no template as far as ability to pay. If you believe that a person is in need of hospice, is in need of end-of-life care, absolutely reach out. In our particular situation, we don't have any prejudice against anyone's ability to pay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And just to educate too, Alan, tell us exactly what you get when you get with hospice, because I know my care team is fantastic, but give us the four points that everybody kind of benefits from.
Well, first of all, all of the durable medical equipment, all the medications, all of the actual clinical care that's needed for that particular individual. Provided for under the Medicare hospice benefit, which we all pretty much use as a guideline, is provided in terms of the object, really, in all cases, is to control any pain and to manage any symptoms of the diseases. So, and those two things taken together should restore some semblance of normalcy to the individual's quality of life.
Right.
But anything necessary to make sure that happens is provided.
Right. As well as you get an excellent RN. David, our chaplain, is fantastic. Barb, our social worker, is great, and so is Lure Volunteer. I actually see in the control room now that we actually have Michelle Smith, the RN that takes over Steve's care and stuff. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us tonight. How are you, doll?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So tell me, what's it like to be Steve's nurse?
Awesome. One word, awesome.
Fantastic.
My pleasure.
How did you get involved with hospice, Michelle?
Well, I've been with hospice for 3 years. What prompted me to go into hospice was actually care of my grandmother that I participated in for several years. She had Alzheimer's, and we took care of her at home for quite a while, and I was looking for a new career in nursing and decided that I thought that was my calling.
Wow. How long now have you been with hospice?
I've been with Delaware Hospice for 3 years, and that was my first hospice nursing job. I had done various nursing the previous about 15 years. Yeah.
Michelle, this is Victoria
who has a
question. I want to take a few questions from the chat room. I think you should be able to answer these since you're an RN, but if not, we'll eventually get the answers. And Gina, who is listening tonight from California, wants to know what kind of support do you guys provide for the family? I guess I'm sure there's tons of communication that goes on.
Oh, yes, definitely. In the nursing role, we provide, of course, nursing support. I would say emotional support, and that's to the patient as well as the family, caregiver, extended family, during the time that we're with them. It's a very rewarding job, to say the least, because we get to meet such great people and, their extended family and friends and kind of become, like I think was said previously, part of, their world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely,
and another,
Michelle. Go ahead, Vic.
Go ahead. Yeah, I just want there's so many questions inside the chat room, and I wanted to get now. I think this one is kind of a biggie. So, Michael, you can probably talk about this as well. This also comes for Gina. She wants to know if you guys could explain the stages of grief. Does that make sense?
You take that one, Michelle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll be honest with you. Stages of grief is probably a good question for Barbara, who's going to come on after me, the social worker. We actually have bereavement support as well, the bereavement counselors that can come on as part of the team at any time. But that is something that we offer for the family patients as well.
Yeah.
But that would be out of my realm of, my role.
We'll
Bob to answer that.
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Michelle. How many clients do you say you cater to specifically within Delaware Hospice? I know that they've been together for 20 years. They have helped over 20,000 people in the Delaware region. How many do you actually see during a given month?
During a given month?
Yeah.
I do believe our census in Wilmington averages around 300, 320, 25, somewhere around there, and that's in the Wilmington area because we have offices up and down the state.
That's a lot of clients, boys.
It is a lot of people, yes.
How do you keep from burning out?
Support from my team, my coworkers, my family. But I have to say that that's the greatest part of, I think, one of the greatest parts of our job is we do work in a team fashion. So I have, I have Barbara, I have David, and I have my extended family at work that helps me get through.
Michael,
yeah.
I want to get this question in from Sandy, and I think now is actually a good time to ask it, and it's about you. And everyone wants to know, did you ever get, I guess, what's called caregiver's depression yourself in dealing with Steve?
Certainly, now that I know it's caregiver's depression, I just thought I was pulling my hair out. It gets very, very frightening when things start happening and you don't know exactly what is going on. The accessibility to see a physician during the last 6 months for Steve has been incredibly difficult because the muscle fatigue and the general lethargic nature just from being worn out from the disease renders it almost impossible to make a regular doctor's appointment. And then, God forbid, anybody have the sensitivity from the bus driver to the nurse behind the desk to the doctor where they're running on schedules, and it gets to the point that I didn't know where to turn to. If it wasn't for hospice, I really, honest to goodness, don't know if I would have had the capability to care for Steve in the capacity that I currently do. And it is, again, what Delaware Hospice does to me, because Michelle made a very good point by being the way you don't get burnt out is the fact that I know Michelle will be coming Monday. I know Lou will be coming
right.
Friday. I know David will be stopping by. I know Barbie, she stops by on Friday and stuff. So I do get that little bit of like, okay, I get a couple hours or even an hour to go ahead, either run to the store or even sit and watch television. Today I grabbed a shower. It was very luxurious to go ahead and have a full hour just to have, you know, nothing going on. But
it's
those things are really, yeah, those little things are really misgiving because you're trying to do the best. And I think the thing that took the toll most for me was the fear. I didn't know what's happening. I'm not a physician. I mean, I have been with Steve for 8 years through his illness, so I've certainly seen the progressive of multiple sclerosis. I've never seen this happen so fast. And secondary progressive is untreatable by anything that they would use for primary progressive or relapsing remitting. So it gets to the point that the medicine doesn't even help. So you're at a point where it's like, I don't know, you know, management of pain is certainly something you have to take care of, but there's also nutrition and, you know, keep the muscles strong and then making sure Steve doesn't, you know, go crazy. I mean, being bedridden is not a big fun part, you know. I mean, with TV and Facebook and Judge Judy, that's the way he holds on, you know what I mean? But wouldn't you say so, Michelle?
And he loves.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I'm going to second that. But I think that's what's important to realize, too, about our job is that we are here for Michael as much as we are for Steve, like we are for our patients and families, to help him manage the care. That's a big role of mine, to help him manage, you know, the medication, the symptom management, anything that comes down the pike, I am, you know, that person.
Well, I think it's a good idea if Barb is there, we can bring Barb in on the conversation, and she can talk to us about those the three stages of grief that everyone's sort of been talking about inside the chat room. Barb, are you there with us?
She's right here. Hold on.
Okay. This is Barb. Michael, tell us a little bit about Barb before she comes on the line.
Barb Buckingham, such a fantastic social worker. She manages everything from the logistics from Medicare to your hospital to your physician, and she, again, kind of keeps our sanity as well and removes a lot of the fear. But Miss Barbara Buckingham, it's nice to have you on the show tonight. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Michael, for having me.
Victoria, this is the lovely Barb. Go ahead.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for being here. So listen, everybody has been asking this question in the chat room. They want to know about if you could talk about some of the stages of grief that folks actually go through. So is there any information you can give us and them about that?
Sure. Stages of grief pretty much was coined with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross many, many years ago. And so the stages that she indicated are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And if you read anything about her work along with David Kessler, they're very clear in helping people understand this isn't something that somebody's like, okay, now I've done denial, it's on to anger. You know, that it's not something that's so cut and dry. And people don't necessarily go through all of those stages. But the other thing that's important to recognize is grief is not something that happens after a death or a loss. Grief is happening throughout the process. People are grieving. A person who is diagnosed with a terminal illness is grieving their loss of independence. For elderly people or for any people who are on heavy medications, they're not driving anymore, and that's always a really difficult thing for people to adjust to. Just not being able to toilet themselves. I mean, these are all really painful things. So people are grieving. The patient themselves is grieving their experience. And then for caregivers, we refer to this as anticipatory grief. So, I mean, we're looking ahead and knowing that someday this person who I love is no longer going to be here present in my life in a physical sense. And so anticipating all of the changes and the impact that that's going to have on us. So there's the process of grief is going on all of the time. It isn't something that just happens when somebody dies.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
Barb, how long have you been with hospice now?
I've been with Delaware Hospice for 4.5 years, and prior to that had primarily been doing mental health work with children and families for about 20 years.
How would you actually characterize being a social worker with hospice versus being within the regular system?
Yeah, good question.
Hospice social worker. We do a lot of times in social work in the mental health system, you're helping people negotiate different networks facilitating the process. I mean, a lot of that is the same, but I think one of the things that's different is just the concept of being present with people. It's not that we have to constantly be doing something, but just being with people in whatever phase of the journey they're in. And it's actually tremendous fun. A lot of people will ask, I think any of us that work in the hospice field, must be so depressing, you must be so sad all the time. And, I mean, the reality is, yes, we see a lot of very sad things, and sometimes, you know, it kind of gets to you, but not that often, because we also see amazing people and people that we might not meet in our everyday lives. And it's a wonderful honor for all of us to be present with a person who has a terminal illness, with their family, and to help them in whatever ways they feel is helpful, because certainly help that isn't asked for is not helpful. And just, it's not our place to impose into a family's life unless we're invited there.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Beck.
Yeah, that right there is a really good point, guys. I just wanted to make a quick mention. A very, very, very good friend of mine, Betty. Betty basically was sort of like my big sister when I was a kid growing up in D.C. She is actually in the chat room, and she's going to join us at about the 8:45 or 8:50. And I wanted her to join us today because her mom, and I promised her I wasn't going to cry on the show tonight, but her mom just passed away, and she had a homecoming service. I believe it was on Monday, and she'll give us the exact date. But I just kind of wanted her to come on tonight so we can just give a little quick tribute to her mom, who basically helped take care of me when I was a kid. So I just wanted to stop and pause and say hi to Betty, who is actually joining us for the first time inside the chat room with our regulars, Gina from California, Sandy from Nebraska, Nora, who is with us tonight. We've got so many guests that are joining us for the first time. Shannon is also with us, and, of course, Mar. Lou is with us as well. And, Barb, I do have a question. Well, this isn't really more of a question. I guess it's more of a comment from an email. And this is a young lady who is listening tonight from Georgia. And she is saying that she's listening to the show, and she very much identified with what Michael has been saying, is that her mother needed the hospice care. Her mom has passed on, but she said she remembers many times that she literally thought she was going to pull her hair out and that she just could not go on herself because it was so overwhelming until she started talking to friends and people actually told her about hospice. But she said that she was a little, I guess, upset because people inside the hospital never really talked to her and gave her that information. She kind of got it outside of the hospital. So I guess to try to get a question out of this, what do you think people should do? I know Alan talked a little bit about some of the steps. He's a patient care specialist. But I guess if you think that your loved one is in need of that service, just, you know, go ahead and make the call.
Absolutely. You know, just because you call hospice doesn't mean that somebody's going to die in the next day, which unfortunately is what a lot of people believe. You know, it's in the past, as Alan was saying, people did used to call at the last minute. I mean, my father had hospice care for 4 days. Certainly was eligible long before that, or he was only sick for 2 months. But I would ask my mom, "Have you called yet?" And she's like, "Oh, your father doesn't think he needs that." And this, my dad died in 1994. So, but hopefully people are becoming more aware of what hospice care is and what Delaware Hospice can provide, and, you know, recognize that if they make the call, somebody will be out in an organization. Our goal is that somebody will be there within 4 hours of that initial call to just provide information. And just because you ask doesn't mean that you have to be signed up. You know, if we can be of help, obviously we want to be there for whoever it is that's calling. And again, as Alan said, a person may call, and it might be a little bit too early. At Delaware Hospice, we have another program that's a non-medical program called Transitions, and that is a program in which we have a counselor who works with families in networking and linking them with other organizations in the community. But we also have volunteers who can be present with people, can provide transportation and just other assistance. So for somebody who's not meeting the criteria for hospice care, they may be eligible from Delaware Hospice Transition Program, which is also a benefit, and oftentimes then people eventually become patients of Delaware Hospice.
Right. And Barb, I want to also make mention, too, not so we have the whole doom and gloom show, but people have hospice for 3, 4, 5 years is what I'm reading, the more I'm digging into it and stuff. I mean, hospice, certainly, you can be a turnaround. You can go off hospice. You can go
mm-hmm.
back on hospice. I mean, those
mm-hmm.
options are also available to the families.
Absolutely. People do have to qualify for hospice. It isn't once you sign on, it doesn't mean that you will continue to be on until the end of your life. There are recertification periods, and this is all part of the Medicare guidelines, so that, as a team, we're always assessing what's happening in a patient's home. Is the patient declining in some way? The nurses look for physical aspects of that, such as weight loss, diminished arm or muscle capacity, and mental functioning, that type of thing. So we're looking at those things. And then we also have a physician who makes face-to-face visits before a recertification period, and that's a Medicare guideline that actually just started last January of 2011. So because in the past people were coming on hospice and perhaps staying on the service really longer than they should have been. So, if somebody comes on, and sometimes people come on and they actually get a little better, I've certainly had that experience, and in which case we have to discharge them, doing our best to put other supports in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, eventually, as the person declines again, they can come back to hospice care at any time.
Great,
wow.
Great information. Michael, you want to continue on? We've got David, the chaplain, who's going to be
absolutely.
On with us.
Absolutely. I think Barb and Michelle are just hanging around drinking hot chocolate. So Barb and Michelle, you hang around there, and I want to go ahead and bring a good friend of mine, and has been, not that you girls aren't, you guys are girlfriends now, but David is, Reverend David has been such a source of light, and the man is hilarious as well as insightful, and he was just here today. So, Mr. David, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
How are you, my
hey
friend?
There. I'm good.
Victoria,
I'm good.
This is the man you saw on the video.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi. I was telling Michael, David, and anyone knows about the video, and I was just completely praising you on Facebook and all over the place. I was just so impressed with the service, how you handled the service. And Michael and I had talked about this many, many times prior to he and Steve making the decision to say I do and get married. And I kept saying to Michael, I said, in my years of covering television and weddings and, whatever it is, I said, it's something that's sacred about having a ceremony. I said, every person that I have talked to, whether it's, being married or it's death or, a child's christening, whatever it is that involves, this sort of spiritual thing, I said, it's something about a ceremony where you actually have a clergy or a pastor that trumps everything, that it's an experience like no other before. So after the wedding, and, we talked on the phone, that was one of the first things, David, that he said to me. He said, Victoria, you're right. He goes, it's something magical and spiritual about that. So I just wanted to say from the bottom of my heart, and I think many of us who follow Tales from the Crypt and follow Michael and Steve's story, just kudos to you. Excellent job.
Well, thank you. It was actually quite easy because they made it easy.
That's
the love I've witnessed between the two of them is amazing. And they made doing that ceremony just as easy as pie.
And I wanted to go ahead and try on that little gown you had on, David, because that was a fantastic. I would have burst into flames had I put it on, but I tell you, it was fantastic. David, how long have you been with hospice now?
I've been with Delaware Hospice about 3.5 years.
And again, why did you go ahead and decide to join up with Delaware Hospice?
Well, being the chaplain, mine is a spiritual journey, and so I knew that time was my last parish that I served. I was in for about 10 years, and I knew that I had reached a plateau in the ministry there, and knew it was time to move on. And a friend of mine said something to me about, there's this position I know of for a hospice chaplain. I went, nah, not really what I want to be doing. And that happened a second time. And the third time it happened, I went, okay, God, you're trying to give me a message. Let me pay attention to this. And I came into Delaware Hospice at that point. Met with one of our bereavement counselors who had also been a chaplain prior to that, Alex Tyree, and the gentleman who was to become my team leader along with Barb and Michelle, Scott Edwards, for what was supposed to be a 20-minute chat. 2 hours later, I was being walked into personnel and brought back for a formal interview, and I was like, okay, this is where I'm being led
to
be.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been exactly where I need to be. I think I have the greatest job in the world with Barb and Michelle. And Barb, I agree with one of the people in the chat room. You and Michelle both rock. I get to come and visit with people. I get to meet people like Stephen and Michael and so many of the other patients that we care for. And they bring us in, as Barb said, and bring us along on their journey. It's a sacred walk that we take with the patients who are facing the end of their life, and they invite us to take a walk with them on that journey and to be a part of what's happening to them and what's happening to the people that they love.
True, and it can be such a very scary journey, but Vic, I have to suggest, and this I will say honestly, I have been a faithful and a faithful man most of my life. And what I love about this is that, and David's Lutheran, so you don't get the two, and I don't want a lot of email from this. It's more faith-driven versus Bible-y, you know, that kind of force down your throat. Not that I have a problem with religion. I just think at times spirituality and faith is a lot more important than the self-interpretation of others. That's my two bits, David. I know we've talked about this in an extent, but go ahead. Give me the bathwater here. But no, it's just it's more important. I find such comfort when you come and visit, especially for myself and to Steve. And the scriptures that you do pick are ones that are of faith-driven, and I just appreciate the sensitivity towards that, just from me to you and from Steve as well. But the attention to detail that this whole entire team gives this family is pretty fantastic. We'll be talking to Lou in a little bit. But just an on-air thanks, David, from me and Steve to you. You're a heck of a great guy, and I truly appreciate it.
Well, thank you. But you know what you just said is what the role of the hospice chaplain is. We are not coming into a home to bring any specific religion. We're coming into the home to take a journey. And
very true.
And so we let you, the caregiver, the patient, guide us as to how to help you, as to how to support mm-hmm. you. It doesn't matter what religion someone is.
Mm-hmm.
It matters what their spiritual center is, it's about providing some sense of dignity back where dignity is so easily taken away.
Very true.
David, I had a quick question for you.
Okay.
When someone passes on, how emotionally attached do you get? Because I'm sure you probably go to some of the services, and in fact, I mean, you may speak at some of those services. How emotionally attached do you get, and how do you deal with that? Because you, like Barb and Michelle and Alan, I mean, you guys really are become a part of that family.
Yes, and you know, not only, I go to the services. I will speak when asked. I will officiate when asked. I get emotionally attached, but because of the center of faith that I have, I often rejoice with a person that the affliction that they've been plagued with is now over. And they get to go on to the next life, whatever that may be for them or not be for them, that they get to do that. And so while I miss them, and there are patients I've become very attached to over the time I've been with hospice, and with Delaware Hospice, that I miss them. I miss my time with them, but I rejoice that they're where they wanted to be, where they needed to be.
That's a good point.
A different viewpoint of it. Yeah.
Well, and again, it's the preparation that I think I don't think it's going to make anything easier, but the preparation certainly does make a huge bit. David, hold on. I got Lou up here. Lou is a volunteer that works with Delaware Hospice, and he relieves me on Friday nights. And he is a funny man, the kindest heart. But Lou, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. How are you?
Good, Michael. How are you?
Very good. Victoria, this is Lou, the volunteer. He's a crazy man. Crazy, funny, crazy. He brings also the best food over, too, all the time. But
hey, Lou, I can tell you that Michael has said to me on numerous occasions when we have had the opportunity to talk, he's like, thank goodness Lou is coming. So I definitely know who you are. So don't think that that you're kind of go unnoticed. Michael always talks about how happy he is to see you.
Well, that's great to hear.
How long have you been?
And how did you get
now,
involved? We're asking the same question at the same time. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm curious. Go ahead.
Well, I've been with the hospice for almost a year now. Well, I'm actually volunteering mostly, to learn, develop, and to experience the world a little better, and also just to give back when I can, because I don't want to take everything for granted, and every day is like a blessing.
Now you got involved with hospice because as a result of your own personal story as well. I believe leukemia as well hit you hard.
Yes, I actually have a friend who actually passed away 2 years ago while I was actually still in grad school in USC. It kind of puts me in perspective where that life isn't like always as clockwork as what everybody imagined it to be, and things can happen at a blink of an eye, and next thing like everything could be gone, and
That definitely is true. And I was sitting here thinking too, especially for younger people, when you're in your teens and your 20s and 30s and stuff, you don't really think, you don't really think too much about death. And, it's not until, it sort of affects you or shakes you at your core when it's an immediate relative or grandmother or aunt, uncle or cousin, somebody that you're close to, and then you have to deal with it. And what's interesting with that, because last year, all of you that follow me know my life is an open book. You guys know my mom almost passed away, and she really didn't know what was going on for 4 months. It was a whole team of doctors and stuff in D.C. that saved her, and God saved her and kept her here as well for us. But I just remember thinking, like one day I was preparing for the show and thinking about interviews, and then you get a telephone call, and it's like, Victoria, you've got to get to D.C. Mom's on life support. She may not make it. So it is amazing. It's kind of like, Michael and Lou, this really, I think, fine line, and I'm sure the chaplain would agree. It's just kind of this fine line, really, between life and death that we just really don't think about until we have to.
Absolutely. Lou, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. What Victoria said, but quite frankly, you administer volunteer efforts to is Steve your only client, or do you have others as well?
Well, Steve is actually my first patient for me with the hospice, and I have to say I am probably one of the luckiest SOVs that's ever volunteered for the hospice, because you guys are definitely one of the most pleasant people to work with, and you guys helped me learn a lot, and I feel like I've grown quite a bit over the couple months after I'm with you guys.
Yeah. Wow. You know what? Since we're here, Vic, and we've got a little bit of time left, I'm going to go ahead and walk the phone into Steve. I know he's been
good.
Wanting to. Absolutely. He's still awake and still doing everything.
It is all about him today.
Absolutely. It's a Stephen day. Now I have to rip off one set of headphones, put another set of headphones.
That's okay.
Hold on.
You go ahead and do it.
Bring on right now. Steve, are you there?
I believe I am.
Well, hello.
Well, hello.
The man of the hour?
I'm adjusting my earpiece. I'm sorry. you know, technical difficulties.
Well, Steve, I know you've been listening all night and everything, but I know you wanted to have some kind words to go ahead and say to the team, Lou, David, Michelle, and Barb. And what's your take on Delaware Hospice from your point of view?
Well, I'll tell you, it's such a weird place to be when you're given those words, and it's like, number one, you got to be kidding me, that can't be happening to me. And then it's like they come over. And they say, we just want to make the last of your life as comfortable and as pleasant as it can be. Well, when the director said that to me, I swear I wanted to reach out and hug her. I felt like I was with my grandmom. They were so helpful and lovely.
Wow.
Wonderful.
And they were.
Wonderful.
Vic, Steve doesn't give compliments readily, as we know, on Facebook and everything like that. So for him to go ahead and make this mention is pretty fantastic.
Steve, how was Judge Judy today? We all love your Judge Judy updates, by the way, on Facebook.
Well, she was pretty calm today. She wasn't yelling or kicking anyone out. But you know what? I keep her on a tight rein, that Judy. You know.
Exactly.
Steve, what do you think about doing Tales from the Crypt? Are you enjoying it? I know we talk about this off air, but are you enjoying doing Tales?
Do you know what? It's kind of fun because I just think before all this happened to me, I would have appreciated somebody being so honest about everything. Because you really think it's almost like back with on I Love Lucy when she had the baby. It just comes out all clean and all dressed and all. You're kind of eliminated all the bad stuff. And that kind of gives you a little bit of the insight to everything.
Yeah, that's a good point, buddy. But all right, I don't want to go ahead and keep you because I know you're getting nappy and everything like that. But everybody, that was Steve
Thanks
McGraw.
Thanks for coming on, Steve. Yay, Steve.
It was nice talking to everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Love. Well, listen, Michael, I think we're going to play some music right now. And then coming up after that, my friend Betty. So, Betty, if you're listening, you go ahead and call. And Betty is going to join us so we can just give a little tribute to her mother who used to babysit me when I was a kid. Betty, mother Marie, passed away. So we just want to kind of give her a shout-out. She's been feeling a little bad. So I said, well, we're doing a show on hospice. I said, call in tonight so we can chat with you and talk about some wonderful things with your mom. So on the other side of this song, Michael, tell us about the song that I'm about to play.
Absolutely. Before we do that, I want to give a big shout-out to Delaware Hospice. Once again, go ahead and feel free to donate your time and money to DelawareHospice.org. I want to give big shout-outs to Alan Henderson, to David the Chaplain, Barbara Buckingham, Michelle Jones, and Lou the Volunteer. You are very, very dear to our lives. But once again, that's www.DelawareHospice.org. And love you guys very, very much. But Vic, Jesse Terry is the guy we're going to be listening to next. He's a Connecticut native, lived a hard life. Parents were divorced at five, lived an undesirable life till he was 12, found music, and now he's got two albums out. First album in 2009 called The Runner, and the song we're going to be listening to tonight is actually called Empty Seat on a Plane, and it's from his brand new album that he's finishing up, and it's going to be released via Nashville sometime in 2012. So don't go anywhere. It's Jesse Terry with Empty Seat on a Plane.
They were once grounded for miles. Now they are constellations burning like us, sipping the wine, tangled like my thoughts churn. Look up above your head at the light. You could be there instead in the sky. somewhere in the sky, there's an empty sea, an empty sea on a plane. At the gate, your name rang out, it echoed loud, it never our runway burns. This patch of dirt, your eyes rescued. Look up, look up above your head at the light. If you could be there instead in the sky. Oh, somewhere in the sky, there's an empty seat, an empty seat on a 767 bound for Austin in the fall. No, we're coming up on winter. You can't stand the cold at all, but you chose. Look up above your head at the light. You could be there still in the sky. Or somewhere in the sky, there's an
Jesse Terry with Empty Seat on a Plane. Go ahead and find him at www.jesse, and it's JesseTerryMusic.com. You can also find him on YouTube, YouTube/Jesse Terry. So, Vic, what do you think of Jesse?
Are you trying to make me cry? Really?
That's my goal. Every time we do this, this is my goal.
Really? Are you trying to make me cry? And you know Betty is about to come on, my childhood friend, whose mom just passed away, and you play that fabulous song. Why do you do this to me?
It's inspirational, I find it. I really do. And all my love to Betty, absolutely. But let's bring her on.
Well, let's see. Yeah, let's see if this is her, if she is here with us on At Home with Victoria. Miss Betty, is that you?
Yes, that's me.
Hey, Betty.
Did you hear that song? Isn't that song beautiful?
It's really beautiful. I was told by my husband and daughter to call you Victoria.
Okay. Well, first, let me introduce you to my on-air husband, Michael Kay. Michael, this is Betty.
Okay.
Betty, this is Michael.
So nice
Hi,
to meet
Michael,
you, Betty.
How are you?
And I'm so very sorry for your loss, but I'm glad that you're here tonight with us. I hope we can go ahead and share some laughs and have some fun and have some good honor, but welcome.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually weird that this y'all are doing this show. I took care of my grandmother-in-law 2 years ago, and she died at home. She had Alzheimer's and dementia. And my mother-in-law died in a – she died 2009, 6 months before her mom. And then this year, the first Tuesday of the year, my mom went, and she refused to go back into the nursing home or hospice care, and she had COPD. And it's just been really, like, really rough 2 years watching our loved ones, you know, go away.
Yeah.
But I'm just so proud of my Victoria, which is hard for me.
Michael, I told Betty when we talked earlier, I said, trust me. I said, all of the listeners and fans will love it if you tell some of these crazy stories about me as a kid, because she used to babysit me and do my hair. So she knows. So anything there is to know about the news lady, the lady on the line here, Betty, knows about me.
Well, I would love to hear an embarrassing story, Betty. That's what I want to hear. One of the good embarrassing ones.
I can't embarrass her. She used to sack myself for me.
But tell them what type of kid I was. I mean, in your opinion, was I a good kid? What type of kid was I?
She was always a very good kid when it came to school, but she was skinny and she was a tomboy.
I can see that.
I was a toothpick. Yeah, she's right. I was a complete toothpick. And what's interesting with me, and I'm a little embarrassed to say, I didn't start to develop until I got to about my senior year in college. I mean, so it took that long for me to develop. I've got to find some old pictures of me when I used to be a toothpick. But, Betty, I remember.
I have them.
Oh, my goodness. Tag me on Facebook,
pictures.
Then. I'm sure everybody would love to see them.
I have all of the little stick straight, no curves, little underdeveloped tomboy.
Every single thing possible. But listen, let's talk a little bit about my darling Marie. Marie is Betty's mom again, who passed away. What date was the homecoming ceremony? When was it?
It was actually January the 14th on a Saturday. It was great to see all of the people, your brother, David, and everyone come from the old neighborhood and see, you know, to see her off. One of her favorite people was your mom. I have a beautiful picture of them, too. And, you know, I love your mom because of her lasagna. I have my husband.
Exactly. That's a great story. Yeah, my mom made this fabulous lasagna, so she makes it for somebody that she's dating who turns out to be her husband. So I always think that's a good story. But, you know, when I was thinking about your mom and thinking back on my childhood today, something that really struck me, and you can probably talk about this too because I know you remember, your mom was very instrumental with the D.C. government and also the Neighborhood Association in trying to get better playgrounds, you know, better opportunities for kids like us who live in the area of public housing in rough neighborhoods in D.C.
Well, actually, all our mothers were. My mom, your mom, and Florence Taylor, they were all a part of that neighborhood thing so that we could have better housing and just better areas because we didn't want to, you know, the wrong element around. You know, education was very important to both of our mothers.
Very highly. So I hate to say, you know, I don't, when I wanted to have you on, I didn't want to dwell on anything about, you know, the whole sad part. I always think that we should rejoice in someone's life. So tell us some of the fun things about your mom and her personality.
Her and Florence Gaysa were two of the biggest party animals. They love to stay up and dance and cook and chase the children out the house. Oh, wow. It's just so many memories of her and her fun spirit. She used to love to go bowling. Her job, you know, the football pool, she was a diehard Redskin fan. And Miss Florence Gaysa used to get on my nerves, and Florence Taylor, because I'm a Cowboy fan. And so some of the football fights were just great between them.
So, Michael, just to let you know on that, and also all of our listeners and inside the chat room, if you live in D.C., the biggest rival is the Cowboys, you know, Redskins, Cowboys. So that's like a really, really big deal. In Washington,
exactly.
If you don't root for the Redskins and you root for the Cowboys. But, Michael, you can identify, you know, I guess some of Betty's feelings in the sense that, you know, her mom has already passed on and had her homecoming service, and, you know, you're here still dealing with that. I mean, any kind of, you know, spiritual, I know, you know, we know what spiritual means to you, that advice that you can kind of give Betty.
Oh, yeah, I have to. Well, first of all, let's just say I love baseball, so I love the Cowboys. And as for Mitt Romney, he still needs to get his hair colored out. I'm reading the chat room. And number three, Betty, I'm just listening to you wondering what I'm going to do when all of this actually comes to fruition and stuff. And the question for you that I have is, although it's terribly hard to lose your mother, certainly it is, do you find it to be a little bit of a relief? Do you find it to be a little bit more of an understanding now that the pain is gone, she's safe, no one has to worry anymore? Does that enter into, do you eventually get to feel that way, where you actually become relieved?
Yes, exactly. I mean, to watch, like I said, my mom was like Florence Gates. They were strong women, independent women raising children on their own. And to watch her deteriorate and get small and get weak and have bout with those strokes and things and just so frustrated to actually need a nurse or need someone and have to wear a diaper, an adult diaper, and just to see the frustration in her, I'm at peace. The hardest thing was I had just talked to her the day she passed, and she told me she was fine. But, you know, just knowing that she's at peace now and she hurts no more, it's easy. And the love and support that came out to send her off helped a lot. I'm telling you, the Facebook, just being able to get in touch with my family and get in touch with the people that came out to wrap their arms around me, embrace me and my brothers as we went through this, was a lot of help. It really helped. Yeah, I get sad, and yeah, I miss her. I miss her dearly, but just knowing that she doesn't have to suffer anymore makes it a whole lot easier for me to deal with. And I did get to say goodbye to her, and I did get to tell her that I love her.
Yeah,
well, that's great.
That makes things a lot easier. Another question I have for Betty too: did Victoria ever stick her tongue to a frozen metal pole? Come on, Betty, fess up. We all know she did.
Where do you guys come up with these questions?
Actually, it's a scientific fact. If you're a child, that's what you've done. You know, I mean, I still have a ring around the ring around where I ripped everything off.
Betty, are you still there? I think we actually may have lost her, and I'm a little happy about that because then she can't answer that question. Honestly, I will fess up and say I did do that one time, and I remember, of course, it felt just horrible, and it never, ever happened again. But, you know, you kind of do that stuff right as kids. Kids, we do a little bit of everything. But I think inside the control room, we actually lost Betty. So I will officially say goodbye and just thank her for calling in again. Her mom's name was Marie, and, you know, she was best friends with my mom. I always remember Miss Marie playing cards and them kind of sitting down, you know, as women talking about life and politics and what they want their kids to be and all that good stuff. And I grew up in D.C., and we lived in a very rough neighborhood, so I'm certainly a product of somebody you know, who didn't grow up in the best circumstances, but at least I think I turned out okay, and I know Betty and all of and everybody is proud of me as I am of them. I mean, all of us went on to just do incredible things. So I just want to thank Betty for calling in and just giving us, you know, a little bit of a quick story about Miss Marie. And Michael, this has just been an absolutely wonderful show. Well, a job well done because you put it all together.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you too. And quite frankly, as Betty with Mom Marie, I loved about Betty is the fact that she was thinking about the good stuff, and that's where I try to go to. That's where Steve and I try to go to every day. But once again, I just want to thank Barbara Buckingham, social worker for Delaware Hospice, the Reverend David Uphold, chaplain, Delaware Hospice, Michelle Smith, the nurse, hospice, and Alan Henderson, a fantastic group. Once again, feel free to go ahead and donate your time or money to www.delawarehospice.org, or feel free to go ahead and bing hospice, and type in your zip code, and you can find your local chapter of hospice and do what you can from that end. But once again, well, as Steve would say, he never gave to hospice a day in his life until now that he needs it.
Right.
It's too late. So it's one of those
and
things.
You know,
but yeah,
now
Vic,
I see why. I just wanted to mention this last point. Now, you know, I see why, and I saw this when I was as a reporter doing stories on hospice, why, you know, people, when they pass on, you know, will leave a tremendous amount of money or whatever they can to hospice because it was such a blessing to them and their time of life and need where they want other people to be able to provide and have those services. So, you know, if you guys have any kind of special holiday coming up, or, you know, I know sometimes for people's birthday, instead of me giving them a gift, you know, I may take the money that I was going to buy a gift and donate that somewhere. So perhaps that may be something that you can think about. Marilyn Bennett has the information inside the chat room to the Delaware Hospice, but, you know, you may want to also just check out your local hospice and do something like Lou, you know, who just basically comes in on a certain day to give someone like Michael, you know, time off, or whether it's 2 or 3 hours that he can go out and do something himself to kind of get a break. So think about volunteering for hospice. But, Michael, this has just been an absolutely wonderful show. You did an excellent job, and I just want to thank you. I know life can be difficult, I can only imagine, but, you know, you and Steve are really a true inspiration to so many people. And tell everybody what your website is on YouTube, because I actually got a couple of emails with people saying that they want to see the video, so where can they find Tales of the Crypt?
Sure, you can go to www.youtube.com/TalesFromTheCrypt, C-R-I-P. A lot of fun to do and a lot of great laughter anyways. Want to give a thanks to everybody up in chat. Want to thanks to Gina, Sandy, Marby for producing a fantastic show, all the brand new guests we had. Lou was here earlier, a whole bunch of others. But, yeah, Vic, it was a great show. Very timely, and I think it's something we need to we're all going to need it, so we have to start planning for it now.
Yeah.
But I think we should end with another song. I'm going to go ahead and end with Timothy Craig. Vic, once again, I'm glad you didn't break anything skiing. That was pretty nice to go ahead
you.
And see. But, yeah, it's always nice to see your pretty face. But
no teeth broken.
No teeth
go
broken.
Go ahead and take us out.
Absolutely. This is Timothy Craig, everybody, with One Small Miracle. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening.
Gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. Cause I don't know which way to turn or what more I can do. I must have tried everything, but does it mean anything? I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. Seems I might have lost my way, or was I just left behind? Somebody send me a signal, somebody give me a sign. I'm reaching out with both hands, I feel like I'm running out of time. It's getting dark where I am, and I can't find the light. I must have tried everything, but does it mean anything? I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. just to get me through. I'm running out of answers. What am I supposed to do? Ain't there anybody up there? Can't you hear my voice? Can't you feel my pain? Somebody send me an angel. Somebody send me an angel. I must have tried everything, but does it mean anything? I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. Cause I don't know which way to turn, what more I can do.
You've been listening to At Home with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.